This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazio, Doug Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got our boy Darren Dreger, our hockey insider. Haven't spoken to Dregs in a while. He'll join us in about 5 minutes on what's really going on here between the NHL and the PA, and it's about money and deferring money and escrow and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
really, it's details that the most people, myself included, are not that interested in, but I just want to know when you're going to play. You know, is it going to cause an issue in terms of actually playing? That's the question.
It might. Like, I was going through it today and talking to a few people. I think cooler heads will prevail and both sides want to sort it out. But I love how Alan Walsh has just got to weigh in on everything. He hates the league so much. The league could be like, hey, we're giving everyone bonuses, we're doing this and that, and he would still have a complaint about it. Like, this guy gets paid by the league technically too, because the players pay him a percentage
of their salary.
Based on a 50-50
percentage of the revenue, yeah.
But, you know, he's got something to say negative about the league all the time. Like, if they're not having a revenue stream coming in, if you don't have butts in the seats, they're trying to figure out a way around that. And it's I read Pierre LeBrun's article, which I thought was quite informative. They're asking for more deferral. They're not asking for prorated. They're asking, hey, we might have to defer some money and kick the can down the road here, because we're not going to have the actual cash coming in. If we, you know, if they have a Canadian division and there's no fans in the seats, how do you expect to make money?
Jamie, let me ask you this. Under these circumstances, these times that we're in,
right,
is what the league doing, do you think, is completely unreasonable?
No, not unreasonable. But
so then you got to figure it out and play, or you don't play and you make zero money. That's the
exactly
way I look at it. I don't break down escrow percentages. Whatever the nonsense, they go back and forth. That's not my shtick. That's for Mike Johnson and smarter people and yourself. But if it's not unreasonable, like, you got to figure it out, or you play and you make nothing. So if that's what you want to do, like, make nothing and not play, then make a stand. But
they're not going to do that. You're right, O. And it's you don't give yourself enough credit. You pay attention to this stuff. It's more about just finding common ground. You're right. We're not going to dive into the numbers here and say this, because nobody cares about that. And certainly fans don't care about millionaire players and billionaire owners. And that's all you read in the comment situation. Well, why are you going to help these billionaires out? Well, a lot of these companies that are billionaires, including MLSE, they're hemorrhaging money left and right too. It's not like all of their investments in all of the restaurants and everything that they own are nailing it out of the park right now. It's tough times for everyone, and that includes the people that are fortunate enough to own these teams and to give us that entertainment value. That's my two cents on it.
Yeah, no, I can see it from both sides. I mean, ultimately, yeah. I understand, I think we all do, that we are not through this pandemic. So there are still going to be adjustments to the business plan. And I get it. If I'm the players, I don't like the fact that they came to an agreement 4 months ago and it's already being changed, because it can never be reversed. The players in the history of their union have never gone back to the league 4 months later and said, you know what we just signed? We actually don't like it now that much. We want to make an adjustment. They'd get laughed out of the room, and Bettman would say, I'm not even going to accept your call. Shut up and go play. So I get it that the players don't like this. I totally get it. But I also ultimately accept that business models are completely in the dark on a day-to-day basis. Because 4 months ago, maybe the projection was, we will have fans in the stands.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know what their thinking was. But it's not today. You know, it might be with some teams, but it's a limited amount. Everyone is hemorrhaging money. Everyone is still trying to figure this out. The ratings are down across the board in sports. There's a lot still going on, and we're still in the midst of the pandemic. So I'm not surprised that the league and the owners are like, you know, we were off in terms of the money, because ultimately it is a 50-50 split. It's not like the players, as far as I know, are not going to be granted access to the ultimate revenue.
Right.
You know, eventually they're going to see it and say, okay, we deserve 50% of that.
Right.
But So in the end,
wasn't
I'm not
surprised.
Wasn't
this negotiated during COVID times? Like they
yeah,
had
it was.
No idea
it
this
was. Before they returned to play. Remember, it was we got to get a new CBA done before we returned to play. They got it done. It was amicable. It was all good.
But
and
no
now
idea
the league is,
that, no idea this was ahead of them? Like
well,
I don't know.
I think what it is they were trying to get through that season and thinking, okay, the next season, we can defer this next season and push it into – you know, if you want to play 82 games, we'll start in February and go right through to September. And I think they took a step back and go, we have expansion coming around the corner. We want
the
to
Olympics,
have a reset.
The Olympics, new TV we deal to, down on the stage.
Exactly. You've got a lot of things where they're like, okay, we might have to have a shortened season here and have a reset on the calendar, you know, through that. And again, I use the term, Hayes, it's your term, kick the can down the road. That's what they're looking to do. And, going through the numbers, you don't want to bore people, but basically they were, you know, talking about escrow, and it was capped at 20%, and then it scaled down to 6%. They're asking for a little bit more. And it's basically trying to balance the books instead of just hammering through this. And the players have to be mindful of it, too. And yeah, they're saying there's an additional 16%. It's not prorated, which means you don't get it. It's more like, hey, we need to defer.
You'll see it,
it
in 3 years, four
exactly.
years, 5 years.
And that's the thing, when we can have what's called financial recovery through all of this. So
The concern, though, from the players is if you're already doing this now, what's to stop you in 6 months from doing it again?
Yep.
And
yep,
then in
right.
a year from doing it again? And then eventually saying, you know what, actually, we've crunched the numbers and you're not getting this or you're not getting that. Like, I understand the hesitation from the players. I wouldn't like it if I was the players either. I wouldn't trust Bettman. He has no right to be trusted based on his history. Locks these guys out whenever he gets an opportunity. And
right.
4 months after a new deal, he's already coming back and trying to adjust it. I get it. But it's a pandemic, and I think we all understand
right.
it's tough to really pinpoint where we're going. Here's our hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Dregs, when all is said and done here, what's your impression that this is going to cause a big issue or little issue, no issue? Are they going to be playing? Where do you see this all going between the PA and the owners?
Well, it's causing a big issue right now. There's no question about that. There's lots of talk among players, certainly among the 31 executive members of the National Hockey League Players Association, players, that is. They, I'm sure, feel to some degree that this is unfair. What has been a surprise in this pandemic? They negotiated a CBA extension in the pandemic. They knew that the second wave was going to be tough. The NHL and the NHLPA have worked in partnership through a very successful return to play, Stanley Cup playoffs and Stanley Cup championship with zero positive tests inside the bubble. So what has changed in 4 months since they agreed and signed off on the extension to the CBA? That's what players want to understand, and they can understand it. And look, it's trying times. There's no question about that. But what, just to play devil's advocate, what if the roles were reversed here? You know, what if the players in 4 months into a CBA went, you know what? We don't like the fact that we're paying 20% escrow.
Brian just mentioned that, Darren. He said,
it would never happen.
Yeah, he would laugh the phone call away. He wouldn't even take the call.
They wouldn't. No chance. We've locked into this thing for at least the next 6 years. So I feel like there's a sense of betrayal in this from the foot soldiers, who are the players, no doubt about that. And I do feel like there is going to be a middle ground. They're going to find some sort of compromise here, because both sides can see how important it is to play a 2021 season, as short as it might be, 60 games or fewer, it's important to the NHL and to the players. But the players feel like they've given enough. And I know that the tone on that NHLPA executive committee call yesterday was dire. It was, we don't want to have to give another penny. So that's where the two sides are digging in. Now, I know that Don Fehr and Gary Bettman spoke today, perhaps more than once, but I don't get the sense that anything was moved forward. And look, if the focus remains on January 1st, as we're reminded by the National Hockey League of starting 2021, then they've got 10 days to figure this out.
That's what I was going to ask you, Dregs. Is there like is there a date you're looking at where it's like if they don't get moving in kind of this direction by this particular time, we could have a problem on our hands, something I know you don't want. We don't want another Dregger face picture taken.
Well, thankfully, that might be the upside of a pandemic from a professional perspective because I won't be allowed to travel. So unless you see it on a Zoom or some sort of DeGiro call, then that's not likely to happen. Well, I mean, look, what happens is, you know, if you don't get going by, say, January 15th, you know, then the calendar shrinks. And instead of having the playoffs begin in mid-May, as would be the hope with a 60-game season, and finishing up at some point in mid-July, you start pushing, right? And I don't think that anyone wants to do that. I don't think the players want to do that. They'd like to get back to whatever normal is as soon as possible. And by hoisting the Stanley Cup in mid-July, that allows you to get a good chunk of your summer. And then when you go into... I guess 21-22 it would be, maybe now the calendar is starting to look more normal. So when you look at January 1st to 15th, the next 10 days will dictate that. But there are lots of people out there, player agents, et cetera, who don't think that there's any hope of starting on January 1st.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to see that. And I find it hard to believe that both parties don't know that also, and in particular the league, who ultimately dictate and determine the schedule and come up with the schedule and unveil the schedule. And I am starting to see a lot of similarities between the way baseball's negotiation played out and the way the NHL's negotiation is playing out, where baseball, the players and the owners came up with a deal like in March, early into COVID, and then all of a sudden it had to be changed by the owners, and there was a big issue, and it blew up publicly, and both sides were going back and forth and not happy, which is very similar to what's happening right now. And then in the end, when it was all said and done and they started playing, they played a 60-game season, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, went on, I believe, the Dan Patrick show and said, well, I always knew it was going to be 60, and I always knew the date it would start. And it's like, wait a minute, then what were you doing? Like, why were you playing that game and playing that role? And I kind of feel like Bettman might be in a similar spot. He's got a date, he's got the games, and it's just a matter of starting when he wants to start.
Yeah,
and how they're going to get there.
Maybe, but how they get there, Brian, is a tough one. You know, there's talk in the province of BC, as an example, of closing the borders. So nobody's getting into BC if they opt to go down that path. You know, Winnipeg, Manitoba's in lockdown. So where are the Winnipeg Jets and the Vancouver Canucks going to play if that happens? You look at the numbers in Alberta. They're not getting much better. And you've got the mayor of Calgary who's, you know, starting to talk about much more restrictive measures. Now, of course, you can grant exemptions, right? You know, that's up to the provincial governments, up to the federal government, and up to the NHL and the NHLPA to massage all of that. But there are some considerable hurdles here. So I don't think, specific to the NHL, it's as easy as flipping the switch and saying, okay, we've got a 7-team Canadian division, and here are the geographic divisions that we're going to play with in the NHL. We want everyone to play in their own buildings. We are going to play back-to-backs in the same buildings. We are going to have a 60-game schedule. That might be best-case scenario. It very well could be best-case scenario. And so far, the National Hockey League has enjoyed best-case scenario with return to play and everything else, as we've discussed. But this financial matter, it's a big one. I think if they can get past this, whatever the compromise is from a players association perspective, and the compromise has to be from the owners, if they can get by this in the next week, then there's a fighting chance of getting those games played in a fashion that's going to be safe from a health perspective to some degree.
From a bigger picture standpoint, what's your understanding in terms of expanded rosters and, you know, like what we saw with the bubble based on COVID? And if it gets to that point, would that allow for more potential signings? Like, would it be almost like a false cap in a way? I mean, how would that all work?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, the player agents and the players who are still out there and available, and some who are restricted free agents, are still waiting for dates. You know, they want answers to all the questions that we're asking. What might roster size look like? You know, if you're an unrestricted free agent, like Mike Hoffman as an example, is that perfect fit going to be there? And if it is going to be there, it's going to be because the team either moved out a contract to make room somehow, some way, or has a player that needs to be put on LTIR. So, you know, there are guys who have made a bit of money, who feel confident in their abilities, and the fact that there is going to be interest, that are playing that game of patience. And then you've got, you know, the agents who represent the bigger restricted free agents like Matt Barzal of the New York Islanders that comes to mind, who's also willing to be patient until you have some dates and some logistics that are looked after in that regard. So the hope is that things loosen up in that sense. But developmentally, there are also concerns from club management wondering, okay, well, what happens? You know, we've seen what's going on in the East Coast League, right? Well, there are NHL teams, the Toronto Maple Leafs included, who have players developing in that league. So what happens to those players? There's not a lot of jobs available in the European leagues anymore. And then you extend that further. The hope is that the Ontario Hockey League gets going in early February. But what if it doesn't? You know, what do you do with your draft picks? You know, and having a taxi squad at the NHL level sounds good in theory until you've got to do it, right? And how difficult is it as a young player to develop when you're not playing every single night? You know, might be practicing with the main team. So they're going to have to devise and figure out all of those issues. But right now, that seems to be secondary. I think that they'll make quick work of that when they get over the economic issues.
With Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, I believe tomorrow is a big anniversary here in this market. I believe that'll be the one-year anniversary since Mike Babcock was let go.
Right.
Which feels like an eternity ago when you consider everything that's happened in the world. Yeah, it was a year ago. and, you know, the Leafs have moved on, obviously. Sheldon Keefe is the head coach. But we haven't heard much from Mike Babcock. And obviously he went out the way he went out, and stories came out about his tenure here and, you know, maybe in Detroit. But I feel like for the most part that has blown over. And I know he's still getting paid a lot of money for the next few years here in Toronto. But I still believe he's coming back to the NHL at some point.
Yeah.
Do you share that belief, Dregs? And how
do
you see it playing out?
No, I do. You know, Ole might jump out of his chair when I say this. He's too good of a coach not to coach again.
Darren, I don't disagree with that, bud. I know he's a good coach. His record speaks for itself. That doesn't mean I can't dislike him.
No, hey, and that's fair. You know, and hey, here's hoping that Mike Babcock has learned a few things about through this experience. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a guy that prides himself on never stopping to learn. And so maybe he's educated himself in this process by talking to many people outside of hockey. He's connected in some weird ways, not just to other sports, but to, you know, world leaders, et cetera. So he's not just sitting in a hunting stand in Ohio, although that's right. What he was doing last week. I mean, you know, he's looking after his family. He's enjoying the downtime in his life, but there is no question the fire in the belly burns. And when the opportunity presents, he's going to think long and hard about jumping back. And if it's the right fit, he will be on a bench again as soon as possible.
I think he will be. And if you actually look back at this guy, it's like outside of a couple things, he was 100% right about this team. 100% right. It just Sheldon Keefe just polished his comments up a little bit different. But everything that came out of Sheldon Keefe's mouth when he was going through the ups and downs of this, of what he went through in his abbreviated season, Mike Babcock said the exact same thing. Am I wrong?
Yeah, he was more blunt, but you're right. He did. I mean, Keefe called him immature. Keefe, during the offseason, has come out and said, we need way more from these guys.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Mike Babcock's mistake, I suppose, was believing that he could come in and quickly turn the Toronto Maple Leafs into a Stanley Cup contender in 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I think he realized pretty quickly that that wasn't going to be a reality. That's next to impossible to do in the NHL. If he'd come in as a closer, maybe after Coach One and potentially after Sheldon Keefe, well, who's to say that, you know, he wouldn't have found a way to lead a more veteran team to a Stanley Cup championship and have a statue outside Scotiabank within the next 10 years. I mean, that could have happened. It's just the timing wasn't right. He accepted the job in good faith. You know, the Maple Leafs as an organization thought he was the guy to turn the corner and lead them to the promised land, and it was obviously too much too soon.
Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Experience the low-maintenance cost of driving a self-charging hybrid electric from Maple Toyota. Purchase in person or online at MapleToyota.com and make the switch, drive a hybrid. Yeah, tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of
is that
Babcock
their famous
being
meme?
Let go.
Is that your famous meme where we were you were on it? Weren't we talking and you're like, breaking news?
Oh, yeah, that was, that's, I believe it was.
It's your famous meme where, like, we were on TV and was it Grappler got into your
Grappler
ear?
Grappler was in my ear and I looked and I almost broke my neck staring into the control room because the Grappler, in a sultry voice, was speaking sweet nothings to me about Babcock being fired.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if I heard it properly.
Yeah, you kind of like stare into space and go, hold on, we got breaking news here. Like, that was a meme for the longest time. We got to see if we can find it.
That needs to come back out into the real world, and we need to start using that meme a little bit more. We'll use it tomorrow for sure. But,
yeah,
you know, Babcock, listen, he went out the way he went out because they played so horribly for him.
Yeah.
You know, he lost the room, quote-unquote, whichever way you want to define it. It was awful the way it just sputtered out of control. And you knew it was coming. And I think the biggest, it wasn't even a mistake, it was just a happenstance, was he and Kyle Dubas clearly were never on the same page.
Nor like, the player. The players had enough, too.
The players had enough. But the players knew that Dubas had their back, too, right? They had the ability to show that they had enough because he was going and Dubas wanted him out. And I believe that. I don't, you know it definitively, but based on the actions, based on the way everything played out, I don't get the impression like Babcock and Dubas were ever that close, ever on the same page. And
what
Dubas
about the classic line, though, Hazy, where he said, "Me and Doobie, we're going to be buddies when we're going to be a lot closer when like 20 years from now."
That was bogus, obviously.
Oh,
I mean,
kidding.
He issued that statement when he was let go. I don't even think he mentioned Kyle Dubas. He mentioned Lou. He mentioned Tannenbaum and Lou.
He
had no time for. And vice versa, you know,
but
and
you
that's
had
fine.
To know.
That happens in professional relationships. But, like, to give Babcock credit, which is what I'm trying to get to, yeah, they tanked the first year. They made the playoffs the second. Like, they had not made the playoffs in years, and they went to the playoffs basically every year he was here, but couldn't get them beyond that.
He did some good things. That's where you're pointing to, Brian, and that's where I was kind of going back to is, you know, some of his flaws, certainly, and I think there's a shelf life with guys that are cut from that cloth. We talk about it. Daryl Sutter, Torts has done a really good job of kind of changing that narrative because I think Torts has learned, you know, to shape the way that he, I guess, works with young athletes. I think Babs will have to adjust, but he's still a good coach, and how many times did we say this, guys, when we were sitting in studio last year? We're like, yeah, you know, that sounded like if we would have just turned the TV off and Sheldon Keefe was talking, that was Mike Babcock talking.
Yeah, if you read the transcript on numerous occasions, you're like, that was something Mike Babcock would say. Sheldon Keefe, because it's still the same team. You know, the players are who they are, and they show their true colors with Babcock, and they show them in many ways with Keefe. And listen, the mood from the organization has changed. The messaging has changed.
Right.
I think Kyle Dubas is a very supportive GM. I think these players are very lucky that he is as supportive as he is because he does get their bags, which I understand, and I think that's in large part a good thing. But Sheldon Keefe has said on the record during the offseason, we are going to demand more, which means he hasn't seen what he wants to see, and neither did Babcock. Babcock was more blunt about it. People were blaming Babcock. Keefe wasn't going to get the blame because he's so early into the job. But Sheldon Keefe's not a stupid man either. He knows he's not far off from taking the blame for the player's shortcomings either.
No kidding.
Right?
Right.
So you guys always say it. What did Pat Burns used to say? You know, make sure you get to them before they get to you or whatever it was.
Don't let the players screw with the players before they screw with you because by the time they get to you, you're done.
You're done.
Yeah, you're right.
So Sheldon Keefe's not a stupid guy. He understands that. And As for Babcock's next destination, who knows? But Seattle still hasn't hired a coach. I don't think he's going there. I don't think that would be a smart play for him or them, quite frankly.
No,
because
that's not a fit.
He's not a rosy kind of salesman. Hey, this is great.
That smells of Jerry Gallant type of, you know, scenario. That
Bruce
type of
Boudreaux,
coach,
something
Boudreaux.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but Babcock will get back in. I have no doubt about that. And the Olympics are here in 2022. I don't think he's coaching the Olympics, but the last time he went there, he won gold.
There's probably a small part of him that thinks he's getting that job regardless. Olympics, I'm the guy. Let's get this moving.
Yeah.
He's probably got that in his mind, too. If I get back in now, it'll give me time to say, who knows? That's just probably the way he thinks, though. Mark my words.
That wouldn't be surprising if he thought that. Yeah, if I get back in and improve, different spot, different guy, but still great coach, send me back to the Olympics where all I do is win gold. Can't take that away from him. I mean, that's just a fact. What he did in 2010 and 2014 speaks for itself. 99% of it was the players, the roster, but he clearly did something, pushed the right buttons. Mm-hmm. All right, Brian McFadden, longtime NFLer, will join us. CBS NFL analyst on the Thursday nighter tonight. It's going to be a big game. We'll look to that, look ahead to week 11. Maybe pick his brain on a survivor pick, too, because the pickings are slim based on it being week 11. But we'll see what he can tell us about that. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Alex Anthopoulos in just over half an hour. Brian McFadden will join us here in a moment, NFL analyst for CBS. We are still alive in the survivor pool. Roger tweeting and saying, basically, it's got to be Chargers over Jets. I mean, it's a no-brainer pick for Roger, and we do have that ability. We got the Chargers. We could pick them. We have the Vikings available. They're at home against Dallas. Those are kind of the two games we're looking at right now.
Chargers. I say Chargers over Jets.
When you say it out loud like that, it kind of has a good ring to it. Anything against the Jets?
Yeah,
Who wants to trust the Cowboys and Kirk Cousins in the same game?
Yeah, that's exactly. You're heading down a road where now you're gonna. It'll be stress watching where the Jets. I mean, Donnie LaGreca. If you follow him at all,
he's a Giants fan, I think. But even he hates on what's going on with the Jets. How can he not? Like, the Jets are coming off a bye, which you would think should help them. But I think they're bye-proof. I mean, I don't think it matters. They could be off for a month, practice every day, be fully healthy. I still think they're likely going to lose. And they're a big dog. I think the game opened at, like, a 7-point favorite for the Chargers. It's been bet up to 9.5. Like, that's how bad the Jets are. There's so much money pouring in on the L.A. Chargers, who have 2 wins.
Yeah.
But
That's sad.
Yeah, it says something about the Jets. And it would be kind of deja vu, right? The Vikings were the team that burned us a couple of years ago, where we thought they were going to steamroll the Bills, and we were out in like week 3. So
yeah, Bills were up 21-0 in the first quarter.
Yeah, that one came to an end pretty quickly. Here is two-time Super Bowl champ, CBS NFL analyst, and co-host of the All Things Covered podcast, Bryant McFadden. How you doing, Bryant?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. We're talking about our own survivor pool and how fading the Jets appears to be the play for almost everybody in football pools right now. Do you think they have a shot at picking up a win, if not this weekend, at any point? Or do you think the Jets are staring at 0-16?
I don't think the Jets will go 0-16. I think I see at least one ball game that they could win, and it could be this week. One thing that we're starting to realize about the Los Angeles Chargers is that they will find a way to lose a ball game.
Yeah, they have been very creative at finding a way to lose a ball game. You're not wrong there. That might make us think. We'll come up with a pick tomorrow. We'll let you know. I'm sure you're very intrigued by our survivor pool picks.
No question. Yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah, but there's a game tonight that is definitely a more marquee game than Jets-Chargers, and that would be the Seahawks and the Cardinals, a battle of the NFC West, both teams 6-3, both great quarterbacks, both quarterbacks in, I think, top five pursuit of the MVP. And the Seahawks are favored at home, but I'm not sure they should be the way they've been playing. How do you see this game tonight playing out?
I think it's going to be an entertaining ball game. I think we're going to see two top-tier quarterbacks go toe-to-toe, and they will not disappoint. I think when you look at many experts and I guess the with Vegas, you know, picking Seattle to win. I think a lot of that has to do with this being a primetime game at Seattle. One thing we know about Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, when they play primetime ball games at home, they win more than they lose. And I think that's a big, it's a big difference. And we look at the winnings, the winnings and losses. So losses. So for me, I think that caters into what we're seeing right now. But in reality, I really like Arizona. The reason why I like Arizona, they have one of the best offenses in the National Football League. I think they're number one in total yards gained, and not to mention how well they've been running the football. And Seattle's defense has been bad. They have been bad. Now they're getting a bit more healthier, but they have struggled. So I think this is a good opportunity for the Arizona Cardinals to create separation within their division and coming up with a huge win tonight.
What is it about the players when you mention like a primetime game? Is it because they're the only game in town? It's the only one people are watching? Like, what's the extra motivation there for the players? You only play 16 a year. Shouldn't you kind of be jacked up for everyone? What is this? How does this factor in so much? I'm dying to know.
No, you will be jacked up for every ball game because it's the sport you play. You're a professional. Your job is to go out and give it your all week in and week out. The difference is when you talk about a primetime game, if I can simplify this for people who've never been in a locker room or in a huddle, you know everybody is watching. You might have that one aunt that really don't watch football every Sunday, but she understands when it's Monday night, when it's Sunday night, or when it's Thursday night, that good aunt of yours is going to be tuned in to watch. And that can be, the same can be said for all your friends and your family because this is the only NFL game on tonight. So everybody will be watching, and players understand that. They recognize that. And that's why when you talk about primetime games, you usually see the best from both sides of the football field.
If you had a pick in the MVP race and it had to be handed out tonight, would you give it to Kyler Murray first or Russell Wilson first?
I'll give it to Russell. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, we're starting to hear the saying, let Russ cook. But outside of cooking, Russell has been asked to seat the people that come into the restaurant. He's been asked to take their menu,
right.
set up the reservations, go in the kitchen, cook the food, and bring it out to the customers. So Russell has been asked to do so much, and he's been standing that tall task as of late. So for me personally, when you look at the percentage of what Russell has to do, week in and week out, and most importantly, being successful in doing so, I'll give the nod to Russell right now.
We're chatting with Bryant McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champ, CBS NFL analyst, and co-host of the All Things Covered podcast. It's going to be a great game tonight, and there's great games down the stretch now, right? Like, we're a week away from Thanksgiving next week, and it's time to basically put up or shut up. But the difference this year being there's only one top seed that'll get that bye, right, with the expanded playoffs. And I think it's significant whoever gets it every year. The statistics would tell you that. Whoever the top two teams are in each conference that get a week off, generally speaking, they're in a very good position going a long run. I think it's extrapolated this year with only one team getting that. Do you get the impression like teams are well aware of it and the pursuit of that? In both the AFC and the NFC has to be the top priority for the top end teams to get that top seed and get that bye week.
Yeah, teams are aware of it, fans are aware of it, and because of that, I think we're going to see entertaining ball game all the way down to the last week. You know, sometimes you look at the NFL season, sometimes the last week or the last 2 weeks, it really is not important to some organizations that have playoff aspirations. But if you have playoff aspirations, you're trying to focus in on the seeds throughout the entire season. Also, like you said, one team will get that off week. That off week is important. I've been able to get to the playoffs doing it either way. What's an off week or playing from start to finish in the first round? But I can tell you this much. When you have that bye week under your belt, you know you automatically in round two, and you get a home game. So
right. Because
of that, we're going to see teams scrap and claw until the final week of the season because every game will matter, especially for playoff teams with playoff aspirations.
The podcast is All Things Covered. He does that, Bryant McFadden, with Patrick Peterson, and he is a Super Bowl champ, CBS NFL analyst, and first time on the show. It's been great. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
Man, you guys make sure you subscribe and give us a listen. Let me know what you think. All Things Covered with Patrick Peterson. Make sure you tune in and watch Pat cover All Things tonight against Seattle.
Yes, we look forward to that. Thank you, Brian.
Yes, sir.
Brian McFadden, Patrick Peterson, doing a podcast while he's playing. He's in action tonight. Arizona, one of the best corners in the league.
What do you think about it? Is there this kind of growing thing where guys that are currently playing, they're doing podcasts while they're playing? I know J.J. Redick's got one. He's the one that had Fred VanVleet on the other day.
Yeah. Danny.
How do you have time for a podcast with what goes into being a professional athlete? I don't know.
I guess you've got a ton of time. If you're on the road and just sitting in the hotel
I get
room
it, man.
And...
You want to talk about driving a coach nuts, though, Brian? If you're struggling and not performing, but you got to get back after practice and fire up your podcast, your coach would want to go nuts.
Yeah, that would be a tough explanation.
Especially if you say something on there.
Oh, yeah. Coach is like a dink.
Yeah, I mean, even... You head down a road where you don't get out. You know, you get a little loose on a podcast. You start talking a little bit, and you let somebody behind the curtain like that. You can get yourself in trouble. You gotta be mindful of that. But I think guys have, to your point, Brian, I think guys have a ton of time. If they're not, you hear about guys on the road now. They're gaming. They're doing things that, you know, a lot of young athletes, like I didn't do that. When we got on the road, it was always dinner and a movie or vice versa. Movie, then dinner, and... You know, if you had a night off, you go for a couple of drinks. Like, it's the athlete's different now.
Everyone thinks we were so crazy, Jamie, but that's all we did. We went to movies, and if we had the night off in the town, we would go out and drink 100 beers. It wasn't that crazy.
I loved playing against Arizona, but Phoenix back in the day where you stayed in Scottsdale, right, like, in a nice area, and you weren't that far from the rink, and... There was like a Houston's next door to the Ritz-Carlton. You'd go have a couple beers. Right next to that was a movie theater. Like, there were certain situations where you knew you were going to, you know, you're playing against Phoenix. That's what you're going to do. You're going to eat at that restaurant. You're going to go to a movie and then play them the next night. Like, you weren't going nuts, even though those were cities you'd want to go nuts in because they're great cities. You know?
Yeah, it would actually be cool to kind of see where these podcasts are getting recorded. It's like when you're in garbage towns, that's when you're downloading or when you're broadcasting podcasts, but you're in New York or Miami, you're like, meh, we got to take a night off on this because we've got better things to do.
But they would have to be bringing equipment and stuff on the road, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, if they're doing it during the season, I mean, football year season, you play, you know, you're not going to do it while you're traveling on the Saturday or the Sunday or whatever, but you just have it set up from home. You do it on every Tuesday or whatever. You know you're going to be at home. Like, you're never playing on a Tuesday in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it makes it a little bit easier. But that's the new going thing, man. Everyone's kind of doing it. And speaking of media, there appears to be a bit of a contractual issue brewing that I think we all saw coming. We'll tell you about that. Alex Anthopoulos will join us in about 20 minutes, and we'll get to some MVP pick'ems. So I'll tell you more about that. We'll do that around 6:25. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Alex Anthopoulos in about 20 minutes. Black Friday is on now at your Chevrolet dealer. Right now, for a limited time only, get great offers across the lineup, plus a $500 Black Friday bonus on most models. But hurry in. This offer will end November 30th. You're going to make your pick at some point, probably into the next hour. We'll hear from Al's brother, and we'll get the full analysis on what should be a great ball game tonight. Seahawks at home against Arizona, and people are waiting to fade, but I think you're going to pick a winner tonight.
I'm going all in with Al's brother. Whatever he has to say, I will listen to it and say, and I hope he's not just goofing around now, trying to screw me over and trying to do like the opposite George, whatever it is. Oh.
He's got a lot of pride on the line. Like,
he's really? A man of character. He's
that's
a man of
not
character.
In his DNA. So he just picks losers on purpose.
They've got a show. Don't they have a show at 7 o'clock sometimes after ours?
Yeah, TSN Edge every Tuesday and Friday. It's world renowned. I mean, there's a lot of feedback, and it's all positive at this point.
Exactly.
Except for when these guys pick winners, because they generally don't. They're batting .500.
The best cooler there ever was.
Yeah, they're
that's
William
the
H.
Concern.
Macy.
They've got a reputation, and they've got to pull it together. So Al's brother is, I guarantee you, he's been studying. He's going to have some angle for you, that will make you proud.
I'm not even making a comment. Whatever he says flies, so there's not even a question.
All right, so we'll get to that in the next hour. You guys see that Jim Nance wants that Tony Romo cash? It's starting to brew already, man. You knew this was coming. The New York Post reporting that Jim Nance, I guess, is up for a new deal at CBS. And he just wrote down on a little piece of paper, Tony Romo cash.
Two words, Tony Romo. That's
it. When you think about it, he's the guy that does the Masters. Does he do NCAA basketball?
Oh, absolutely he does.
NCAA basketball, football on Sundays. He's the Hello Friends guy, and this guy shows up for 16 games a year and starts making 20 sheets a year. He's saying, I am too.
Absolutely. It seems like an easy case to be made. Quite frankly, he could probably make more.
I was going to say, he could say, you know what, whatever Romo makes for the 16 games he does a year, you're giving me double that. He could say double that.
Yeah, because Noodles, you would know this better than the two of us. You've done color for many years. You got to be a team. They work really well. But the play-by-play guy speaks 70% of the time.
For sure.
If the play-by-play guy's way off, you're like, this is a weird product. Like, they kind of stabilize things. And Jim Nance is great at what he does, calling ball games. I mean, this guy calls Super Bowls. He calls NCAA March Madness Finals, Final Four. He calls every big golf tournament that CBS has.
But he didn't play. That's the difference.
No,
like that's the Tony Romo.
So
had all
what?
The leverage.
Nobody says to Jimmy Nance, "Well, you never played golf, Jimmy."
I'm not trying to be disrespectful to him. That's my point was is that's the Tony Romo argument. Romo stepped right off the field into the booth. No experience. No nothing. And they handed him, what, 20 sheets, $17 million, whatever
17
it was.
Million a year or whatever.
There were circumstances involved, though. This guy jumped into the booth, and people were raving about him. He had a couple games where he was calling every play ahead of time. He was the Woj of color guys, and people got fixated on that, and they were like, this guy's so awesome. And there was this big media hype about how awesome Romo was, and I think he could write his ticket after that happened. He had them over a barrel.
Great leverage. His agent was leaking out that ESPN was hot on the trail and was really looking to bring him in. And Monday Night Football was a disaster at that point in terms of their booth. They had Jason Witten in there. You know, Jason Witten was like listening to paint dry. It was awful.
But sorry to interrupt, but you argue that Peyton Manning's going to be right there?
Manning doesn't want to do it, though. If he wanted to, he could have taken the job. By all accounts, ESPN
on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, ESPN offered him like $20 million a year or whatever, apparently. I mean, allegedly, and he turned it down because he's not sure he wants to do it, or maybe he's got his eyes on management, ownership, who knows? I mean, he's got so much going on right now anyway. With these golf things, like he's got that golf match or whatever with Phil and Barkley and Steph Curry next week. He does stuff already, I believe, with ESPN and NFL Films. So, and how much money did Peyton Manning make? I mean, he was the poster boy for the NFL for 15 years.
Yeah,
he's got hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not like Romo didn't have money, but Romo also had that leverage. But so would Jim Nance. Like, Jim Nance has been making a fortune and working for CBS for 30 years. He is CBS Sports. Like, when you think CBS Sports, you think Jim Nance.
I think he could ask for 35 and have a case.
$35 million a year.
I honestly do.
Who
the
guy?
I don't
want to
mention his name because he got himself in trouble, but he did Good Morning America. He was making 27 sheets a year.
Oh, Matt Lauer was making a fortune.
Yeah,
Lauer was making a fortune.
Jimmy Nance. Jimmy Nance, he runs the show. Nobody says to Duthie, "Oh, you didn't play the sport. You're a flag football player."
Oh, that has
player.
Nothing to do with
I wasn't
it. It has
being
nothing to do with not playing.
Nothing. Jimmy Nance runs the show. He could. I would honestly say I'm not even using Romo as a comparison. I want more. I don't see Romo on the flight with me to go into the college basketball games while he's at home teeing it up, and I got to bust my ass doing college football. Doing golf.
Well,
see him.
It would come down to the debate from CBS. Who would be more difficult to replace? Who would be easier to replace? I guess. Right. You know, they clearly looked at Romo and said, he is such a superstar already, and we can't find another one like Romo. I don't know. Like, Jim Nance has been connected to CBS. He's been doing it for 30 years. He's been calling the Masters in football and you know, it just he knew it was coming.
As much leverage as Romo had, I think Jimmy Nance has even more to
He's
be quite honest with you.
Unless they've got a young heir apparent coming in.
I don't have that answer either.
Unless Duthie's in line and going down to the States and taking over because he could do the job as well. But I don't think that's happening either.
Joe Buck's on a different network, but I'm saying
He's at Fox. He's not going anywhere. Yeah, I mean, he could, I guess, if his deal was up, then maybe he would hop networks. Sure, I mean.
That's where you might get into some problems is if a guy like Joe Buck was an unrestricted free agent, you say, I'll start taking some money here because I think Buck makes $7 million. So there,
right. We're talking astronomical amount of money anyway, like based on what they're – but it comes down to relative terms. And Romo got $17 million, and Nance calls every game he does plus college basketball plus every big golf tournament on CBS.
25. I say he asked for 25.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Is your cat, gnawing on your camera? Your camera's been moving the whole – time. What's going on over there with your cat?
No, there's nothing wrong. Don't blame my cat. It's not my cat. I kind of move my legs and shake my legs, and it moves the camera. So
I think it's
that.
The cat. I think your cat's gnawing on the camera.
No, it's not.
And that's my guess. All right, Alex Anthopoulos coming up in the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.